This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
It's 313, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. We'll get to that Chiefs game coming up here in about 15 or 20 minutes with Derek Johnson. I'm Nick Schwert. Thanks for hanging out with us today. I've been to about a dozen late nights in my life, give or take. And it's crazy to think back to like the first ones that I went to back in the late 90s and then compare them to what it has evolved to. And it's really not even the same thing. It's not. Like it is a completely separate thing. We should act like last year KU started this thing called late night, because it's not fair to compare it to what was happening in the late 90s. That would be like comparing the curly Lambeau Packers of the 1940s to these Packers with Aaron Rodgers. Like, yeah, technically, they're still the same team. Technically, they're both the Packers, but I mean, come on. They're nothing. They share absolutely nothing in common. Because when I used to go to late night as a kid, that's when they would actually start it at midnight, when they called it Midnight Madness, which meant you were getting to the field house really early, and you were waiting for like 5 or 6 hours before the night actually began. I remember the first time I went to, my dad told me, like, bring books to read to pass the time. This was before cell phones and I couldn't play games on my tablet. It was bring books, and I was a kid, and so I hated reading. And I said, wait a minute, I thought this was a basketball thing. I don't, and you're going to make me read? Like, it's like my least favorite activity, and you're combining it with my favorite activity. Like, let's not, what's going on here? But that's the way it used to be. And I was a kid, so I was impatient, and I was a brat. So I came to appreciate it and love it. Because all I wanted to see was these guys play in what ended up being a meaningless and forgettable scrimmage. But I absolutely loved it, as everybody else who was there loved it. And the scrimmage is still a part of it, but it's hardly the main attraction. In fact, I'm not convinced that there is a main attraction to late night anymore. It has simply just become an event that you need to be at if you are a KU fan, right? If you are a real KU fan, you are going to late night because it's free. And you're saying, you know what, this is going to be time-consuming, but I'm giving up my Saturday night because this is what fans do. They go and they kick off the season the right way in spectacular fashion. That's what KU basketball fans do. They go to late night.
I think they have a little bit of everything for everyone. Obviously, the main attraction is it's Kansas basketball. It's back. Let's get all hyped up about this. For the students, you're talking about something where it's going to get over by 9:30, 10 o'clock. Yeah, it's taking up a big portion of your Saturday night, but it is a perfect let's get pumped up and then we can go out immediately after this. For the families, it's free to come into. You have all the skits. You have some of the things to make the children laugh. And then, of course, you get to see your Kansas basketball. So there's a little bit for everyone. You get a little bit of entertainment. You get a little basketball in you. And again, it's free and it's in an off week right now for KU football.
It's just as much about the skits, about the pump up videos, the presentation, the performances. It's kind of like the Grammys for KU basketball. Nobody really understands why we love watching it, but you're not about to stop going anytime soon. Anymore, though, I don't really try to consume late night as a fan, because it's, even after everything you laid out there, I still just don't really think it's for the fans. It's not about the fans. Not that it really ever was, even though it doesn't matter. Like, if you like it, you like it. Doesn't matter if you're the intended audience or not. But this is about the recruits. Like, late night is for the recruits. It is a presentation and extravaganza that is solely focused towards keeping recruits happy. Because you're a KU fan, and what KU fans do, regardless of the situation, is you're going to show up, you're going to be loud, you're going to be passionate. So if you can count on that, then they don't really care what they give you, because it's for the recruits, and that's what it should be. That's who late night will always be for. I don't know if that's how it started or if coaches around the country eventually realized, like, holy crap, these kids love this, so why don't we continue and try and focus it in their direction? The funny thing about that is that fans at late night are as much a part of the show as anyone or anything else. I think fans go thinking they're going to be consuming it as an audience, but in actuality, you're the performers. Like, you are there to create the environment, because without the environment, late night would suck. Doesn't matter if you had all the performers in the world. If the fans are showing up and showing out and getting loud, then everyone wins. Like Lil Yachty, great performer, right? Put on a great performance. Recruits and players, they love that stuff. But it wouldn't matter if you had Jay-Z, if you had Beyonce, Taylor Swift, Kanye West, and the ghost of Jimi Hendrix all performing a live 2 hours headed at Allen Fieldhouse. If you don't have fans in the stands, then the performance is going to stink. Same thing with the scrimmage. Well, who cares if LeGerald Vick threw down a great dunk if nobody was there to watch it, right? I'm sure he does that in practice all the time. You are a part of, if you're going as a fan, you were not there as the audience. You were there as a performer. And guess what? You're batting 1,000. So good job. Congratulations.
I talked about this kind of maybe a week ago about KU football. I mean, whether you want to believe it or not, you as a fan do have a hand in the program. Now, it may not be the overwhelming choice. It's not going to be number one on the list. But you have a hand in it because you're helping get those recruits into the program, whether it's at a KU football game trying to fill up the stands or whether it's at something like late night where, yeah, some people want to call it a glorified practice, but it's pretty cool that you're in a program to where that type of stuff matters. Like, you'd rather it matter than not matter at all. And you going to these things, like Zion Williamson or whoever, name your recruit who was there. If it's half full, if the fans aren't into it, is it really going to be that enjoyable of experience for them? Whereas now, those recruits who were there go, man, they were that pumped up for a practice event.
You know, I laughed after the game. I don't know if you heard this, but Bill Self, you know, was asked about the performance and stuff, and he said he's a Lil Yachty fan now. That he's joining the Lil Yachty fan club. And it's just funny because you don't expect to hear that from Bill Self. I remember last year Bill Self was asked about Drake. I don't remember the context. He was asked about Drake, and he said, oh, you know, I heard that one song about his phone ringing. It was that Hotline Bling song that he had. So that kind of tells you, like, Bill Self does not have his ear to the ground on everything that's going on in hip-hop, nor would you expect him to. But hearing him come out and say he was a Lil Yachty fan, it's funny because you know Bill Self isn't driving around Lawrence bumping hip-hop in his car. And it's just that sensation of somebody reaching over the generational lines to connect with the kids he spent his life connecting with. And I'm sure there were hundreds, if not thousands of people in the field house on Saturday who had never heard of Lil Yachty before. Couldn't name more than 5 rappers if you asked him to. Couldn't understand half of what that kid was rapping about down on the court and couldn't care less because they were just happy to be a part of it. Like I said, I don't consume late night as a fan because as a KU fan, you are not the intended audience of late night. You are a part of the show and you are counted on year after year to continue to keep that alive. If KU lands one of those guys that were there on late night, one of those recruits that were sitting behind the bench, we'll talk about it how, oh, late night was great, Lil Yachty may have done it, oh, the program, the tradition, the venue. And the fans, man, they're going to look around and say, I couldn't believe that 16,000 plus showed up for a scrimmage. Now, I consume late night when I go to late night as if I were a player, or more importantly, a recruit. I consume it as if I'm some stud 5-star basketball player that has every major program in the country trying to get a piece of my butt. And if you were any of those kids who were sitting behind the bench on Saturday and you've got one of the biggest rappers in the hip-hop game performing down on the court 50 feet away from you, awesome. Guess what? You're not going to see that anywhere else. 16,000 plus showing up for a scrimmage like it's a conference game? Yep. You're not going to see that anywhere else either. Those pump-up videos, the skits. I mean, Rock Chuck Video is the best at what they do. Like, you see what I'm getting at, right? Like, these kids come to late night and have their needs catered to in a way that is damn near impossible for any other program to match, let alone one up. Like, other programs can try and do it, and will try to do it, and will pull out all the stops that they reasonably can. Lil Yachty was nominated for a Grammy, man. Like, he's not just signing up to go play anywhere. He's not sending out a memo to all of the Big 12 schools say, hey, in case you guys need anybody to come perform at late night, I'd love to be a part of it. No, they had to go get this guy. How many schools can do that? You can count on one hand. Nobody in the country, including Duke, including Kentucky, including whoever else you want to throw into that category of elite top-tier blue blood programs, nobody else is doing that. Nobody else is going to top what KU did on Saturday. And recruits are going to notice that.
And I think one other factor with this was with Lil Yachty out there, and if you were at Leighton in the Fog, I'm sure you saw this as well. He was going up with the players, and this is beyond him going into the stands and taking selfies with the fans while he's performing. He was going to the players. He was interacting with the players. He was on the bench during the scrimmage. So it's not just that, hey, listen, if you come to Kansas, we're going to have cool connections. We're going to have cool performers come. But it's like, these performers are going to come and actually want to meet you and actually talk to you. And you're going to actually get to meet and greet some of the celebrities.
And that's what's insane to me. Like, again, because there were a lot of people at late night, whether it's parents taking their kids, whether it's alumni, whether it's just people who have been season ticket holders for 10, 20, 30, 40 years for KU basketball. A lot of people who are like, who is this guy? Who is this guy down on the court? But it doesn't matter because you were a part of it. Imagine if Lil Yachty would have been down there and it was just the players and the recruits were sitting behind the bench and it was an empty arena. How do you think that performance would have been? It would have been lame. It would have been terrible because fans make late night. And that's the one part of it that nobody else can replicate. Sure, maybe somebody else can go out and get a rapper to come perform at their late night. But last year, KU brought in a local guy who's a pretty big name, made a lot of money, Tech N9ne, and then they one-upped it big time. And if there's one thing you should know about Kansas basketball, and this really goes for any program or any company who is at the top of their business, you're not going to do that and then lower the bar next year. You're not going to do that and then come back next year and say, hey, that was just a one-time deal. Yeah, that was fun last year, but we're going to be a little more. No. That means it's only getting bigger. That means this thing is only growing. And it is turning into a massive extravaganza that nobody else can match. Late Night in the Fog is the greatest recruiting spectacle that anyone in this business has ever conjured up. It's always been great, but KU is launching this thing into the freaking stratosphere over the last 2 years. None of the kids on Saturday who were there will ever have a visit like that anywhere else. I don't care if you take them to a football game between Clemson and Alabama. It won't matter. Because nobody is getting what KU put on display on Saturday night. They're not all coming to KU, but none of them are going to go somewhere else and have that experience topped. It's not going to happen because there are built-in advantages with KU basketball, the venue, the fans, the history. And now they're just continuing to pile it on top. And it's going to be it's going to be shocking to see where they take it next because this thing is only growing, and it's massive.
And if you think we're talking hyperbole here, with these recruits and some of these stories, how it's going to help them fetch some of these highly ranked players. It's true. Like, the proof is in the pudding. Billy Preston talked about how, yeah, Late Night in the Fog was like one of the reasons why he came here. That was his big visit. And I mean, you're seeing it. I know it's not the men's team, but the women's team just got three recruits. And one of them was like a top 20 recruit who's at Late Night. So the fact that this is such a big spectacle and that all these people are coming out to enjoy it and they're getting the great entertainment, it is affecting how KU is recruiting in a positive light.
He's Derek Johnson. I'm Nick Schwert. This is Rock Jock Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. The Chiefs are the lone unbeaten team left in the NFL. That's cool. It's a trump card, but it's only a certainty for about four more hours.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
We will have a Zaxby's giveaway for you coming up about 15 minutes from right now, so be listening for your chance to win free lunch courtesy of Zaxby's. I am Nick Schwert with Derek Johnson. This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. The Falcons lost to the Bills yesterday. So that's their first loss of the season, which means as of right now at 3:30, the Chiefs are the lone unbeaten team remaining in the NFL. So number one in the NFL as of right now. The NFL is the most predictable team in sports because the AFC is going to shake out exactly how everyone thought it would, right? Patriots 2-2. Who cares, right? Every NFL fan and their grandmother knows that they're going to get it figured out and end up at 11-5. Easily into the playoffs. AFC North, what do you know? It's the Steelers, about a 20-foot drop-off, maybe 200 feet. Maybe 20 is not enough. A 200-foot drop-off, and then everybody else. The AFC East is an absolute nightmare, as expected, that the AFC South. The South with the Titans, the Texans. Will it be the Texans? Will it be the Titans? The bleeping Jags are in first place right now. Who knows? All I know is I want no part of watching it play out over the next 3 months. Can't wait to see that division champ promptly lose in the wild card game. Like, that's how it's going to happen. And then you've got the AFC West. The Chiefs are looking like the class of the division, if not the conference, if not the entire NFL. Broncos look legit. Raiders have floundered a little bit and might not be that good, but not that good might still be good enough for the sixth seed in the AFC wild card. Like, that's kind of how it's going to shake out, because look across the conference, what teams who are kind of hovering under the surface are you expecting a big breakout performance over the next 3 months?
I mean, are the Bills actually good? They just beat the Broncos and the Falcons.
Look at all of the, and we'll get to more of that later, but yeah, you could do that across all of the division leaders in the NFL and tell me which of those teams are actually good. Because there's no such thing as parity in the NFL, at least not on a year-by-year basis. Because there are, once again, going to be a lot of familiar faces in the AFC playoffs. Patriots, Steelers, Chiefs, Broncos, fill in the other two blanks, right? Give me the winner of the AFC South and then your wild card team, which is going to be who, right? Like, maybe the Bills, maybe the Raiders. Is that it? Those are the only guys in contention? Because nobody else from the North's going in. Jets? No. Dolphins? No. Colts? No. Bengals? Browns? Ravens? No, no, no. Like, no chance. Not like it's not looking good. No chance. No chance. Because those teams are terrible. And I don't care what the standings tell you. Like, just go and watch them. They are absolutely putrid football teams. It's no such thing as parity. Patriots, Steelers, Chiefs, Broncos. Fill in the other two blanks. That's how it's going to work. Patriots have been to the playoffs 7 years in a row. 9 of the last 10 years. Broncos, 5 of the last 6. Steelers, 7 of the last 10. Chiefs, 4 of the last 6. So not only are they familiar faces, they're ones that we can pretty much say with certainty are going to be there at season's end. Like, they are going to be in the postseason. I think it's the Chiefs are the only undefeated team in football, and that's only in guarantee for about 4 more hours. Hopefully it will still be true at the end of the night and for another week, but at the very least, it's only a certainty at this very moment. And that's awesome, because there are 31 other fan bases across the country that right now have stuff to complain about today. If you're a Chiefs fan, you have nothing to complain about. You do not get to complain today. You do not get to complain about anything football related or Chiefs related. It is hereby forbidden, and you will be banished to the far corners of the earth if you are caught complaining today. Punishable by law. You will be sent to prison if you complain about the Chiefs today. That is actually a fact. You cannot argue that. You will go to jail if you complain about the Chiefs today. Because look at the rest of the league. 31 other teams. All right, let's break this down. There's 31 other teams that are worse, that are not as good at football as the Chiefs are right now. About 20 of them, about 20 of those 30, so about two-thirds are optimistic, naively optimistic at best about the rest of their season. Right, here's what they're saying today. Hey, I mean, like, I know we've got a lot of problems, but here are a few reasons why they might be able to turn things around. This guy just said his ankle's not at 100%, so maybe when he gets healthy, he could really turn it around this season. I really like that undrafted free agent that we had to put in at cornerback because our other two guys didn't pan out and one of them got injured. He's starting to show some progress. Maybe he can end up being competent over the last 3 months. Maybe we turn it around, get to 9 wins, maybe 10 if we hit a hot streak, and who knows? We could wind up with one of those wild card spots. That's two-thirds of the league today. Two-thirds are hoping for a wild card spot at this point, are hoping their team can fix it enough to the point where, hey, it's not all completely done. About 15 of those secretly know there's no chance that they're making it to the playoffs, right? Like, we drafted the wrong guy. I can't believe we gave that one guy such a huge contract. What was with that play calling in the fourth quarter? Who's that bum that's starting at right tackle? We got to find a replacement there. He's not getting the job done. It's not the quarterback's fault. He's not getting enough time to throw. Right? Like, conjuring up all of these different excuses for why is...
I think one of the craziest things with the Chiefs, though, if you're just talking about, like, how unbelievable of a run this has been for them, just go back to 2015 when they were 1-5. So from that point on, after going 1-5, they won 10 straight games, obviously, to go 11-5 and make it into the playoffs. if we're discounting the postseason, you include that 10-game winning streak, the 12-4 season last year, the 3-0 start this year. Over the last 29 regular season games since starting 1-5 in 2015, they've gone 25-4.
All right, good job. Good job. Derek had to step in there. He had to pinch hit as I was like choking on my own saliva. I'm telling you, I'm playing injured today. I'm playing injured today because I have to, right? I'm playing hurt, all right? I'm not playing it. If I was injured, I'd sit out. I'm just hurt so I can play through it. You're just trying to figure out what you can do knowing secretly you're not going to the postseason, that you're a month in and the season is shot. It is completely over. It is not going to work out. There's about 10 teams, 10 fan bases who want to fire their head coach today, who want their coach to be out of a job right now because he is in over his head. The guys have given up on him. He doesn't know what he's doing out there. Way in over his head. Time for the GM to cut him loose and see if we can salvage this season. And then you've got about six teams. You've got about six fan bases. Off the top of my head, Browns, Colts, 49ers, Bears, Bengals, maybe the Chargers too. That's six right there. You've got about six teams who it is done. It is over. There is nothing that can change this season. It sucks. You are going to be one of the worst teams in the NFL. You are a month in and it is over. It is over. Do not get optimistic about anything because the next 3 months are going to be miserable. Nothing good is going to happen to your team over the next 3 months. Oh, the Bears? You're going to throw Mitchell Trubisky in there? Guess what? He's going to be awful. It is not going to work. After a month, you're going to say, we drafted the wrong guy. We should have got Mahomes. We should have got Watson. That's what's going to happen. Oh, you're the Chargers? We should have never left San Diego. It is in our guys' heads. There is nobody filling up our stands. It is terrible. The 49ers, we should have never fired Jim Harbaugh. Why is Brian Hoyer our starting quarterback? Why do we not have any other options? Why is Brian Hoyer our starting quarterback, and it's like clear cut? It is like inarguable that he's the best quarterback on the roster. Like, there is no second option. It is Brian Hoyer. How did that happen? What is going on there? The Colts? Like, how? How are you this bad? You are 6 years into the Andrew Luck era. You are the first team in my lifetime who has a franchise quarterback, but still are terrible. Like, the worst team in the NFL. How is it possible? How can you be that mismanaged? How can you misrun an organization so bad that you have, like, a generational talent at quarterback? He can't stay healthy because you couldn't put any sort of a semblance of a competent offensive line around him. How is that possible? The Browns, it is unbelievably fascinating. They will make a 30 for 30 about how some team had just managed to never be decent ever in the history of their organization. You know how hard it is to be that bad for that long and not just like luck into even like a modicum of success? Nothing. Nada. You've never been good. You will never be good. Like, these are the kinds of things that other fan bases are saying today, and they're going to be saying them the rest of the season. And that is miserable for even a split second to think about how it would be, because if you're the Chiefs, you've been there. They went 2-14 like 5 years ago, and it stunk. And you know how it felt. And guess what? Just revel in the fact that you don't have to think about that today. That after all this other terrible bleep that's going on in the world, at least you are the only team. You are the only fan. You are the only fan base who doesn't get to complain about the NFL today. You are the only people in this country who cannot complain about their NFL team. And maybe that is a very small sliver of hope that you have for this world. But it's something, man. It is something, and you should enjoy it. If you're a Chiefs fan, you are 3-0. Maybe that will be different tomorrow. Hopefully not. But you just don't know. So enjoy the certainty of being a good football team today.
Yeah, but they have so many penalties.
You can't do that. You don't get to do that. Very few fans across the league have that luxury at this exact moment in time. Some would say none, so cherish it. Fans are miserable all across the country. They are screaming at each other on talk shows all across the nation, trying to figure out what's wrong, trying to figure out who is most to blame. There are a lot of guys to blame for our suckiness, but who is the most to blame for our team's abject suckiness? And it's hilarious because all Chiefs fans are doing right now is retweeting those infographics about how Kareem Hunt is basically the greatest football player of all time. I mean, seriously, imagine being a Cowboys fan today, right? I mean, nobody expected you to be good last year. You come out and you're like the best team in the NFC. You've got a quarterback and a running back who in their rookie season completely took the league by storm. As rookies. And now they're a year older. They're more seasoned. Sky's the limit, right? You're 2-2. And people are going to spend all day and all week in Dallas trying to figure out why they're just not very good right now. And that's got to be absolutely miserable. Well, we shouldn't have drafted this guy in the first round. I don't know. Maybe Zeke was benefiting from this. Now the scouting report's out. Maybe Dak Prescott's being asked to do too much. Oh my gosh, that sounds terrible. I am so glad we don't have to do that today. So many teams across the league who had high expectations for their team for a wide variety of reasons, and their team stinks right now. So all you get to do is complain and point fingers and try to figure out the root cause for your wretchedness. And here we are in Kansas City with a quarterback who nobody else wanted and who's basically been perfect through 3 weeks. We've got a coach who everyone around the league loves to make fun of, and he can do no wrong. And we've got a running back who everybody passed on 3 times over, and he's better than your running back. Look at all the teams. I mean, you mentioned this earlier. Look at all the teams who are leading their division today. Bills, Eagles, Rams, Panthers, Lions, Jags. Are any of those teams actually good, or are they just happen to be the best team in their crappy division? I mean, seriously, how many of those teams are you? Do you feel comfortable saying we'll make the playoffs? One? Maybe? Who? Which one? Which one of those teams can you point to and say, yes, actually good? The Bills? You ready to say the Bills are actually good at football? Of course not. Why? They're the Bills. What about the Rams? The Rams. Oh my gosh, they're 3-1. New young head coach Todd Gurley looks reinvigorated. Come on. You think the Rams are going to the playoffs? Do ya? I want to hear it. Go out there and say it. Are the Rams actually really good at football? What about the Lions? The Lions are 3-1. The Packers are right behind them in the division standings. But the Lions are 3-1. They're good at football, right? Let me hear you say it. Let me hear you say how good the Lions are, because you're not going to do it. You're not going to say it because nobody wants to sit there after 1 month of football and utter the words, yeah, the Lions actually good. It's not going to happen. How many of those teams are good? How many of those teams are you seriously convinced are going to the playoffs?
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if a couple of them make it, but that's just because we get some unbalanced schedules. We get teams who get injured in the NFL. Like in, what was the year with Todd Haley? Was that 2012 when the Chiefs made the playoffs and they were 10-6?
2010.
Yeah, but that team wasn't like a normal playoff team. You had Matt Cassel. You had Dwayne Bowe as your leading receiver. Like, that team was not a 10-6 football team. And it happens in the NFL. So there's going to be a team like the Jaguars, or I wouldn't be surprised if it's the Rams, where they go 9-7, 10-6, leak their way into the playoffs, and then they just get crushed in the playoffs.
There are two unalienable facts about the NFL. It is filled with uncertainty, and it is filled with crappy teams. And if you're a Chiefs fan, you don't have to worry about either one of them right now. And if you ask me, that's pretty cool. It's 345 on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
O'clock hours here, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. He's Derek Johnson. I'm Nick Schwert. Thanks for hanging out with us. KU had late night in the fog on Saturday, and reviews are in. It was a smashing success once again. Probably landed KU a recruit or two. Don't know exactly how many they're going after or how many they're realistically planning on getting this year, but a lot of big names were in the house, and that's the reason why they invite them to late night. They say, hey, anybody else? Who are the other schools on your list? Oh, Duke, Kentucky, Arizona, Louisville, Michigan State. Any of those guys have Lil Yachty coming in to perform? No, they do not. Okay, just wanted to make sure. We'll see you on Saturday, right? That works out pretty well. That's a pretty good tool that you can use at your disposal that pretty much nobody else has the luxury of using. Billy Preston, if you heard 2 weeks ago, was a guy who Bill Self was lauding a lot of praise on. It was at the KU West Virginia game at halftime. He joined David and Brian Haney up in the booth for a little halftime interview. And what he said was that from a talent standpoint, Billy Preston is the best guy we have in our gym. He is the most talented player we have in our gym. And you'll hear yourself talk about freshmen like this often. They are very talented, but something along the lines of they still have to put the pieces together. We'll see if he can get it all figured out this year. Billy Preston's going to be no different. Where did he end up as far as his ranking was concerned? Was he top 20 guy or was he kind of outside that range?
He was right on that fringe.
He was a McDonald's All-American, so fringe top 20, top 15 player in the country. 6'9", 6'10", kind of reminds you a little bit of the Morris twins and just their ability. They're not necessarily bangers down low. They're not necessarily like pure outside threats. They can do a little bit of both. And you saw Jesse Newell wrote about this. You saw this in the Italy games. Self was challenging him to go down low, to stop with the fadeaway jumpers, the mid-range game, like go down low and bang. And we see this with him a lot, right? He does this with big guys and his post players all the time. But the difference between if he's asking Carlton Bragg to do it and if he's asking Billy Preston to do it is you'd like Carlton Bragg to do that. You'd like it because it'd be better for the team. With Billy Preston, it's a case of he needs to do it because if he is not a low post threat, then how many do you realistically have? I'll name them for you. Udoka Azubuike. That's it. I mean, Mitch Lightfoot's going to be a sophomore. No idea what to expect from him simply because he didn't play a ton as a freshman. Could he take a huge leap forward sophomore year? Sure. I'm not going to count on it, right? So you just don't know. Billy Preston is as talented of a big man as you have on this roster. But you need him to be a big man for you. Because if you don't have him as a big man, then it's very, very easy to answer the question of what is KU's identity going to be? How are they going to play? The answer is going to be, well, they're going to play a lot of small ball because they simply don't have guys to put down low. If Billy Preston can be one of those guys for you, then all of a sudden, your options open up a little bit. And you do have a decision to make as far as, okay, what are we better at? What style suits us better? And that all rides on Billy Preston's shoulders, quote-unquote, getting it figured out as a freshman, which is a tall task.
And I think he gives you the best of both worlds. Watching him out there play, he is kind of a stretch four, but he's not like, when you think of the word stretch four, I think we've gotten a connotation like, oh, it's a guy who he's kind of slower, not really athletic, maybe he's a little undersized and he can shoot the three. It didn't really look like a knockdown three-point shooter. I'm sure that's something that he's still working on. But it was in his arsenal, and he wasn't afraid to do it. He wasn't afraid to dribble with the ball. So
I don't think he's Bill. You always hear Bill Self talk about the green light. I do not think Billy Preston's going to have the green light this year from three.
I don't either, but I also think it showed what kind of versatility he has. And
right,
my point
that,
getting there
yeah,
with this,
right, right.
Obviously the number one goal is for him to be that big man, because if he's not playing defense, if he's not playing post defense, if he's not posting up, if he's not getting rebounds, it's not going to matter because he's just not going to be a focal point of this team if that happens. But assuming that he does those things, assuming that he's able to provide you good minutes as an actual big man, that gives you a lot of options, because some of these quote-unquote four-guard lineups where you have your four-man, kind of an a la Josh Jackson last year, was a guy who was able to do multiple things. And I think Billy Preston can provide you with that as long as he's playing that role of the big man with the secondary part playing as that kind of almost like another guard. That way on offense, I think that's a secondary part to it, but I think it's something he can accomplish.
Yeah, they're going to have to play both, right? They're going to have to do small ball. They're going to have to have lineups where they play the traditional five. Maybe. They don't have to play big if Billy Preston proves that he's not going to be more of a four. You talk about what is exactly a stretch four. To me, it has nothing to do with your physical traits. It has everything to do with your style of play. Like, right? Can you go down? I mean, because we thought of Carlton Bragg as a stretch four. Physically, there's no reason why he had to be a stretch four. If he would have been a traditional post player, we would have never said, well, he needs to add a a jump shot to his game because he was 6'10". Long, lanky, he had the body of being a banger down low if he could have added weight and he could have had that instilled into his mentality. But Carlton Bragg at times looked like he wanted to be Kevin Durant, right? He wanted to beat guys off the dribble and pull up jumpers, and it just didn't work. He wasn't efficient at it, and it just never panned out. In the case of Billy Preston, you kind of hear, again, I think it was Scott Chasen who wrote about this over the weekend, but you kind of heard Bill Self saying some similar things about Bragg as he used to say about Carlton Bragg in terms of how he wanted to see him play, what he wanted to try and get out of him, and what kind of player he wanted him to become for KU and for him personally to be at their best. And I'm not saying that Preston needs to be a traditional big for KU to be at their best. I'm saying he needs to be a traditional big for KU to have options. Because if he doesn't, then KU doesn't have options. Then they have to play small. So as much as it's on Billy Preston, you could look at the flip side of things and say, it's LeGerald Vick too. You look at those two guys, Billy Preston and LeGerald Vick. Those are the two guys who are going to determine what type, what style of play KU is going to utilize this year. If LeGerald Vick proves to be the player who everybody's talking him up to be during the offseason, KU's going to have no problem playing small ball. You have to have somebody who can defend the four, right? That's what it's going to come down to. We know this team's going to be able to run. They're going to be able to get threes up. They're going to be able to score in transition. It's going to be really fun to watch. Same thing as last year. Maybe a little bit different, but it's the same concept. But Josh Jackson could defend the other team's four. Who's going to do that this year? Is it going to be Billy Preston or is it going to be LeGerald Vick? If LeGerald Vick can't do it, then we'll see how patient Bill Self is with that, because he can be patient offensively. He ain't going to be patient defensively. If you can't defend, if you can't rebound your position, he's not going to play you.
But I think that is a big difference between if we're talking about Billy Preston here with Carlton Bragg. We've seen a willingness to go after balls both on the offensive and defensive glass with ferocity. And sometimes he doesn't get it, and I'm sure there's going to be times where he makes mistakes because of it and gets an unnecessary foul. But I think there's a lot more toughness there than what we saw with Carlton Bragg. If you're just talking about these two guys, Vic and Preston, I mean, this is an unbelievably athletic team. I think from top to bottom, because last year it's kind of hard to argue when you have Frank Mason and Josh Jackson that last year's team isn't as athletic as this one. But I think from top to bottom, this might be Bill Self's most athletic team.
I mean, Josh Jackson was a great athlete. Frank Mason, as good of an athlete as he was 5'11", right? So when you're talking about athletic, that can be somewhat subjective. But no question. I mean, Bill Self said it last year. Said it last year with Josh Jackson on the team. LeGerald Vick's the best athlete on the team. Billy Preston is a better athlete than Carlton Bragg was. By all accounts, Udoka Azubuike's in the best shape of his life. He's lost a ton of weight. He only had him for 11 seasons, but he is a better athlete than Landon Lucas was. Malik Newman is known for his shooting prowess, but you're a top 10 player in the country. We'll see what kind of athlete you are. Svi Mykhailiuk lost weight, says it's going to make him leaner, be able to play quicker. Whether or not this team is more athletic than they were a season ago really doesn't matter, because last year they were one of the best transition teams in the country. This year, like, if there's one certainty about this team, they are going to be great in transition. They are going to be great at shooting threes. Like, we know that. You cannot argue either of those things about this KU team. How are they going to score down low? How well are they going to defend the post? How well are they going to rebound? There's plenty of questions about this team, but offensively, there aren't a ton. It's just about how they're going to play. Because here's one thing I feel confident about. If they end up playing small ball, guess what? They're going to be pretty good at it. If Billy Preston ends up being good enough to play the four and they play more of a traditional lineup, I feel pretty confident it's going to be pretty good. Like, they're going to have a good time scoring the basketball. And they're going to play around with it. We're going to see both of it. And over the course of the season, Bill Self's going to decide what he likes better and what this team's better at, and if they can afford to have guys like Preston and Azubuike on the court together for extended stretches of time. But this team's going to score the ball well. They have for the past couple of years. They've shot a lot of threes. They're going to continue to shoot a lot of threes. We just don't know how it's going to look. That's the only question we have.
And I think there's going to be a ton of, I guess, four-guard lineup concepts throughout, because even when Billy Preston's in, and obviously this is just a late night scrimmage, and from that, and also Italy where they were playing lesser competition, so it's not necessarily the best indication of what's going to be KU's scheme. I mean, there's still a month before the first exhibition, but when you watch Billy Preston play, I can't recall a time either in Italy or in late night where he was caught on the block with the ball trying to post up a guy and go to the rim with a hook shot or whatever. I remember all of his possessions being something where it was a face-up, whether it was in the post or a lot of the time kind of around the elbow or the three-point line where he was facing up his defender. So, essentially, because you think about it like, okay, if you're playing a four-guard lineup, that's going to be great for offense, but what about defense? But why can't it be a little of both? If Billy Preston impresses, then you basically have your traditional lineup defensively, but you have a four-guard lineup offensively.
Right, I think that my only question is about that depth in the front court, and we could even make this about Mitch Lightfoot too, because if he Mitch Lightfoot's going to get playing time, right? He just is. He's going to be that third big behind your first two, behind Azubuike and behind Preston. Lightfoot's going to be that guy. He's going to get minutes. How many minutes can he give you, and your team still be solid enough to do what you want to do? Right. If the answer is, hey, Lightfoot's good enough to give you 15 minutes a game if you need to. He's good enough to give you 20 minutes. Well, then all of a sudden you have the luxury of playing Preston and Azubuike more. If Lightfoot goes out there and his play is somewhat uninspiring, well, then all of a sudden maybe you don't have that many options. Maybe all of a sudden you got to make sure those guys don't get into much foul trouble because we don't have the luxury of running that guy out there 15, 20 minutes a game.
Well, and here's the problem with Mitch Lightfoot. He's a true four. He's only 6'8". So if you're talking about a four-guard lineup, yeah, he might come in for a few minutes for maybe a five-minute stretch here or there. We saw it last year on occasion. But that doesn't fit out well. Like, Mitch Lightfoot's best plan to get playing time is with another big in the game, whether that's Udoka Azubuike or we don't know if Billy Preston's going to be able to lock down a five. But just on paper, your only five on this roster is Udoka. So will Mitch Lightfoot be able to carve out a role when Udoka's not in the game? Because, like I said, he's undersized. I don't see him as being a guy you want to put in there at the center position. So if you're only able to play when Udoka's in and you're not even the starter behind Billy Preston, that really does handcuff how much playing time you're going
to
get.
Yeah, because when you say not big enough to play the position, all it really comes down to, can you defend your position? Can you rebound your position? And if you're in at the five spot, you need to be the best rebounder on the team, and you need to be able to defend whoever else is in the five on the other team. Now, there are ways, there are guys who are hybrid-like guys. Like, we could take Josh Jackson as an example. 6'8", 220, 215 maybe. You wouldn't look at him on paper and say that he is the perfect size to defend the four. But he's a freak athlete, and it just worked out. Great rebounder. He played with a ton of tenacity, high motor. It just worked. Like, it. Not every guy is like that. Legero Vick's not Josh Jackson. He's 6'5". Mitch Lightfoot is, what, 6'9", maybe 6'10"? And he's not thick. He's not big. We don't know what he's going to look like if he can rebound with tenacity, if he can defend capably enough. If not, all of a sudden, all right, well, guess what? Azubuike, you better hope that conditioning is up to par because you're going to have to play a lot of minutes. Like, there are questions there. The guys who are there are talented and certainly good enough to get the job done. We just don't know how much they're going to be called upon to do their job. It's 419 on the new FM 1017 and 1320 KLWN. Up next, it's your Monday news break. Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 1017 and 1320 KLWN with Derek Johnson. I'm Nick Schwert. About half an hour left in the show, give or take. Rick Pitino selling his house in Louisville said he's going to lay low for a while as this what he calls a scandal blows over, so to speak. But he did add that he will be completely vindicated when this thing is all said and done and the dust settles and we will find out that he had absolutely nothing to do with anything. So this is, again, him not denying that it happened, him just saying it wasn't me, right? He is just Shaggy sitting on the steps. It wasn't me, man. Even though it's just one thing after another with him and this basketball program. If there's one thing that Rick Pitino does not do well, it is lay low. So the idea that he is just going to right off into the sunset, and then we're all going to look back on this. Imagine, in his scenario, we're all going to look back on this 5 years from now and go, man, we really did Rick Pitino dirty. We really threw him under the bus when it turns out he never did anything wrong. Rick Pitino wants us to believe that he's just the unluckiest man alive, right? That he keeps getting implicated in stuff that he had nothing to do with. I don't even know of a more tragic figure than Rick Pitino because of just the unfortunate luck that seems to happen upon his doorstep on a yearly basis.
It's very unfortunate. I'm sure there's a lot of people in jail who it's been unfortunate that they just keep committing murder or that they just, it just, you know, it just happens.
Right? Like, they keep pinching me, man. I keep getting set up by the wrong guy. I wonder, like, because what I want to know is, like, what's going through his head to where he, is he, like, does he believe that he had nothing, they did nothing wrong? Does he believe in his heart of hearts that he's just doing the same stuff everyone else is doing, and for some reason he's getting set up and getting caught when other coaches aren't?
That's what's weird. Like, why? Well, first of all, why would you even say anything? Like, why would you come out at all? Like, even if you are innocent?
Because he doesn't lay low. He says he's going to lay low. It's not what he does.
And that's so
dumb.
Have
you seen the all-white suits, like, that he wears to games?
There is no upside to this.
Looking like Boss Hogg from Dukes of Hazzard.
Well, that's because it's the KFC Yum Center, so they give him the free white suit.
He does look like the Colonel.
But he's not, like, you're not going to gain anything by coming out and saying, I didn't do anything. All that you're going to do is set yourself up so that when this does come out,
it's thrown right back in your face.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you are innocent, then being innocent is going to prove that. There's no point in coming out and yelling about it.
Yeah, I don't get it either, but that's just kind of who Rick Pitino is. He's a weird man. He really is, because you wonder what's going through his head. Like, does he really believe when he's saying this stuff, like, that people are buying it? Does he really feel like he's being done dirty, or is this just the way his mind operates and he has to go on the defensive every single time, as opposed to just saying, you know what, man, I pushed the envelope year after year and it caught up with me, and maybe I should just shut up and go away? Because that's how I feel like most people would react, right? Like, you take a shit, your pride takes a shot only so many times before you just give it up. You throw in the towel and say, all right, well, I tried, but clearly my reckless behavior has caught up to me. But he doesn't. And I think that's the way people like that just simply act. And I don't think he will ever, you'll never have that expose, that interview 5 years from now where he's getting this exclusive one-on-one sit-down with ABC, and he's saying, yeah, you know what, I screwed up. The way that, you know, like a lot of the steroid guys have, Alex Rodriguez is probably case in point for that. He's kind of owned up to the fact that he was dealt a great hand at life in baseball, and he just went out of his way to push the envelope and screw it all up for himself. He's kind of come to terms with his mistakes. Rick Pitino, at his age, he's never going to do that, because you had the chance with the stripper parties, didn't. You decided to point the finger, blame it on a rogue assistant. Okay, got away with it, whatever. Even though you had to vacate all those wins and that national championship, whatever. Like, you got away with it. But he's not getting away with it this time. But he still seems to think that he will. He still seems to think there will be a day of reckoning where everybody comes around and says, we're sorry, Rick. We're sorry we did you like that. We're sorry we didn't wait for the facts to come out.
I feel like this comes from one of two things because of that. That either means that he is so convinced, he has been arguing this for so long, that he's, like, convinced himself that, no, it's not my fault, I didn't do anything wrong. Either that, or I think this one's more logical, it is the fact that he's kind of gotten off, not quite scot-free, but let's be honest, he got off pretty well. I mean, he was suspended, what, 6 games for that last incident? Yeah, they do technically lose the national championship, but everybody knows in the back of their mind they won the national championship. They're not pulling back everybody's T-shirts that say national championship. So I think it's from this mind or this standpoint that, you know what? I've gotten away with this before. I've lied through my teeth before, and it's fine. It's not a big deal. I've gotten away with it, so why would I change that up now?
So Frank Martin, who's at South Carolina, he's holding a press conference on Thursday. And what's interesting about this is even though South Carolina has been in a roundabout way implicated in this FBI case, people have deduced that they were one of the unnamed programs that were mentioned in those court documents that didn't necessarily name the program, the same way they didn't name Louisville, the same way they didn't name Miami, because they didn't have anybody arrested like Auburn did, like Oklahoma State and USC and Arizona did. Well, Frank, none of those programs have really done anything more other than firing slash suspending those assistant coaches and issuing a kind of blanket statement talking about what that university and what that program stands for and how they are bored by all of the terrible acts that were allegedly happening inside their walls. None of that happened with Frank Martin and South Carolina, but they are holding a press conference on Thursday, and I have no idea what he's going to say, what's going to be announced. Frank Martin is a guy who, at least around here, everybody seems to like. Even KU fans kind of respected Frank Martin and what he did at Kansas State, and certainly he made a lot of fans across the college basketball world with the Final Four run and the press conferences and the kind of the way he just kind of shoots from the hip when he's out there speaking in front of microphones. So that's a press conference that I'm going to be very interested to see what comes out of.
It kind of reminds me of when Jimmy Valvano, the former NC State coach, and a lot of people know him, Jimmy V Foundation, and his SB speech. I mean, he got popped at some point, and this is why he ended his coaching career, for some type of recruiting violations as well. And it turned out to not be his fault, if I remember correctly. Obviously, we don't know what's going on here with South Carolina, but it's kind of similar to that. You have a guy who's a well-beloved coach, and there might be something going on. And I think this just shows how much this whole FBI investigation spans over. Because South Carolina, that's not an Adidas school. That's not a Nike school. That's an Under Armour school.
Well, the guy who got Lamont Evans, who got arrested, the Oklahoma State coach, he was at South Carolina. And he is accused of doing, in these court documents, he is accused of doing the same things at South Carolina as what they have on the record for him doing at Oklahoma State. And with it gets murky when you talk about the responsibility of head coaches when it comes to monitoring every single thing that their assistants do. They can't be everywhere. They can't see everything. But it is their job to ask questions and to monitor everything and to govern everything. And to an extent, with an iron fist, to make sure that nothing terrible comes down on your program. Because at the end of the day, you can say all you want about, well, I didn't know what this assistant was doing, or he went rogue, or he was going behind my back. You are the face of that program. We say it all the time with KU, right? For all the great players that come through this program, in college basketball, the head coach is the face of the program. Bill Self is the face of Kansas basketball, the same way that South Carolina, you know, Frank Martin is the face of that program. Rick Pitino is the face of Louisville basketball. Not Peyton Siva, not Russ Smith, not whoever hit the shot in the national championship. Mario Chalmers isn't the face of Kansas basketball. It's Bill Self. So South Carolina and Oklahoma State, if you have an assistant coach who's doing these things, it's going to come back on the head coach. And with Frank Martin, he seems to be a guy, at least with his words, that would seem to be above all of this. And maybe that's just me being naive, thinking that there's anybody who I could look at because of the way that they hold themselves in the public light as if they are above all of these sorts of dirty deeds that are going on in the world of recruiting. But if there was ever a guy to fit that bill, it'd be Frank Martin. What did Michael Beasley say in that interview he did last week? He said, no, Frank Martin isn't paying players. Frank Martin never paid us because he's too cheap. Try getting a dollar out of that guy. Well, maybe he is. Maybe he is that guy. But if he's got assistants doing his dirty work for him, it's all the same.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't the assistant coach who was at Oklahoma State, now South Carolina, with Frank Martin? Wasn't he the assistant with Frank Martin at Kansas State?
Lamont Evans, I believe he was. Yes, because when they started getting all those recruits in, when it was initially Bob Huggins for that first year, they started getting Bill Walker. They got Michael Beasley. They got Jacob Pullen. It was Frank Martin who a lot of people said was the reason they got all of these guys, because he was a high school coach in the D.C. area. He had connections to these AAU teams. And whenever that stuff happens and it's an assistant coach that you don't really know about and he's got connections to a certain area And it's AAU, so even at the time, it's not covered to a great extent the way they are in college. It's kind of hard connecting the dots, right? When a program starts getting all of these big-time recruits and they're not known for it, it's always hard to figure out exactly why, because reporters can write about it and they can write about his connections to the area, or he has AAU ties and he has high school ties to this hotbed of recruits. And there's just always enough information provided to where you can look at it and say, all right, well, I mean, I guess that makes sense. People seem to like him around there, and he's got good relationships with coaches and players, so I could see why they would want to come play for him in Manhattan, Kansas, a place that has never been known for basketball supremacy. But Frank Martin turned it into that. Bob Huggins turned it into that, and if Lamont Evans had a hand in that, I don't know. Was he at Kansas State? I would imagine he was. If he went with Frank Martin to South Carolina, yeah, he was an assistant coach during the 2011-2012 season. So that's it gets into murky water as to how far you can point the finger. But if there was ever a guy who's going to come out and speak candidly about the situation, it's going to be Frank Martin. Be interested to see what he says on Thursday. I'm Nick Schwert. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.